Let's go.
Welcome to Micromobility, a podcast exploring the disruptive potential of small electric vehicles. We cover the best companies building these amazing new vehicles, as well as topics relevant to how they impact people, cities, and our planet. My name is Oliver Bruce, an investor in mobility and climate tech, and my co-host is Horace Dedieu, founder of Asimco.com and Micromobility Industries. Hey team, Oliver here. This week I release an episode from the SoCal tour, or Southern California tour, that I did back in January. This time it is with Kevin Cox, the CEO of Electrabikes, which was originally founded by Benno Bezinger, who I've also had on the show earlier. Electra is the fifth largest e-bike company in the US and has a real focus on making distinctive cruiser-style bikes. And they've made the pivot from being a traditional bike maker to an electric bike maker with the support of Trek, who own them. I really enjoyed this episode, just as a guide on how traditional bike businesses are adapting to micromobility. Hope that you enjoy it. In the meantime, if you enjoy this conversation, you will also enjoy Micromobility Europe and America. We have Europe coming up on June 8th and 9th in Amsterdam, and then we have Micromobility America happening in the Bay Area on the 19th and 20th of October. I will, of course, be at both, along with Horace and James and the whole team. Looking forward to hopefully having some more of you there, along with more than 1,000 people, both builders and doers in the micromobility space, talking about the latest and greatest in micromobility. And with that, here is Kevin.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Micromobility Podcast. I'm here today with Casey from Electra. How are you going today, Casey?
Great, thanks.
Awesome. Hey, well, look, until recently, wasn't super familiar with you. And I think that's probably going to be the case for some of the listeners as well who come from the world of scooters or other kind of shared bikes and stuff. So take us through who you are and like what Electra is, and then we can go back into your history and how you got there as well.
I'll start off with the name, right? So everyone in the bike industry calls me Casey, but my real name is Kevin Cox.
Right.
That's the Kid Casey. The only person that doesn't call me Kid Casey is my wife.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so listen, I've been with Electra going on, year 12.
Wow. Okay.
So 2 years prior to the acquisition from Trek in 2014, and then, going on year 10 with them. So it's a super awesome time to be in the bike biz, as you know, and, Electra's done some amazing things over the past 12 years that I think are super notable and just great to be part of the team.
Awesome. And so take me through so you started it 12 years ago. It obviously was like cruiser bikes originally, but now you've moved on to you're doing electrics now, and you got bought by Trek in 2014, which I think is like, it's such an interesting part of the story, which I'm really looking forward to getting into. But like, how big are you now? How many bikes would you do if you can release any of that sort of information?
Right. So I'll give you a bike heritage kind of background first. So the company founded in 1993.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep.
So the great part about that is, guess what? This is our 30th year anniversary this year. We were founded just down the road from where we are today in Encinitas, California. And, founded by two Germans, really bootstrapped the company by selling pieces of the Berlin Wall.
Right.
To get things
going. No way.
Yeah. So that's a super awesome story that we'll take offline sometime.
Yeah.
Over a few pints. That's a great one.
Yeah.
And so for 10 years, it was all the company made was beach cruisers. Mm. So we tried to reimagine that. So, imagine that, a bike brand is founded in Encinitas, California, which is one of the great North County surfing areas just north of San Diego. So everything was really inspired by beach and surf culture, right? So for us, when you look at our designs around surf and Americana and, salt flat bracing and rockabilly, all that stuff was really part of the, artistic and design pillars for the brand. And, we still have those as part of our brand pillars today, being really cognizant about color and design and style and function and fun. In 2003, we changed the bike industry because we came out with a new geometry for a bike frame. That's what we call our flat foot technology. It's patented for us. And it really just relaxed the seat tube angle, moved the pedal forward a bit, and it gave the riders this very, very comfortable feeling on the bike. They could sit on the saddle and put their feet flat on the ground. That's the name, flat foot. It's always a little tongue-in-cheek about the technology side, but, you know, in today's world, wouldn't be so much of a technology, but 20 years ago, for sure. And that, in and of itself, launched the comfort bike category. Until that point, there wasn't really a comfort bike. People were riding, you know, mountain bikes around as kind of their city bike.
Yep.
The townie launched that whole comfort bike set segment and really put us into the forefront of comfort biking. And
the townie is the townie is the name of the bike. Yeah.
I hate that a lot because people will always be like, "Hey, yeah, okay, scene, we know what's going on with Electra, whatever." And people will know about the townie, or they won't know about Electra, but they'll be like, "No, I don't know the name Electra, but you know, my wife and I just bought townies. That's our bike, right?" So it's almost a sub brand.
Yep.
For us. So that really gave us, you know, kind of this opportunity to kind of line up the brand. So we had cruisers for the beach, we had townies for around town, and then we came up with a bike line called the Loft, and that was really kind of our city bike. And then since then, of course, we've segued all those bikes into both what we would call an acoustic version.
Yes.
And an electric version.
Yep.
And so I think probably mostly that's why you're here today, because you've made that transition to the e-bikes.
Totally. And what would your, like, so how many bikes would you sell in a given year, and what percentage of those would be kind of acoustic and what percentage of those would be electric?
Right. So what I can tell you is, because we're privately held, and we don't talk so much about specific that numbers, but what I can say is in 2013, we launched our first e-bike. It was a townie e-bike with a SRAM hub-based motor, and it was our entree to E. And it was early on in the e-bike uptick, for sure, in North America. And at that point in time, Audra, we were probably doing just about 2% of our global business in E.
Okay.
So fast forward to today, and that's about 60%.
Wow, really?
So I would say that, you know, even though we started as a lifestyle career brand, today I'd say we're a lifestyle e-bike brand.
Yep. Excellent. And then in terms of, so you launched with those bikes, and then you've gone the more traditional, like you are a bike company. You started as a bike company. You still are a bike company. So you distribute through, like, you got purchased by Trek in 2014. Can you talk me through, like, you were independent before that, and then you got purchased by Trek, and then you now use Trek as for your distribution and that sort of thing? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So always independently held bike company, stood on our own 2 feet for forever. The original founders did bring on a private equity firm at one point in time to help them expand. And it was that firm that I was hired by to come on and help when they decided they were going to transition the company itself and sell it. I had some M&A experience, so it was a good fit for me. I was passionate about bikes, so I came on to help with that. And the fit for us was with Trek.
Mm.
And I always say that, you know, people look and say, like, why Trek and Electra? That doesn't make so much sense. But to me, it's crystal clear, you know. To me, it's like Nike and Converse, right? Nike's like the number one, you know, enthusiast-based, you know, sportive shoe brand out there. And Converse, you know, is this lifestyle brand, you know, so who would think that Nike would buy Converse? And that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But at retail, it makes great sense. And for, you know, Trek and Electra, it's the same thing. They're like the number one, you know, enthusiast base, awesome, you know, bike brand. And, you know, we have a segment of customers that they just weren't hitting in this whole lifestyle side of the business, right? Non-enthusiast based.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because of that fit, we also shared the same channel, right? So Trek and Electra, both pre-acquisition and outpost, both sell in the independent bike dealer channel globally. And so that was always a great fit for us. Even pre-acquisition, some of our best retailers were also Trek retailers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just the natural integration between the brands that way.
That's awesome. And so my sense is that you're pretty independent from Trek. I mean, in the sense of you run a kind of your own company. It's not like you're sitting in the Trek offices, for example. You have your own offices and it's sort of like, what is the relationship at this point?
Yeah, I mean, so we're a wholly owned subsidiary of Trek.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the best things about being under the Trek umbrella is they're just super smart, good folks, you know? I think when we first got acquired, they were giving us this kind of Midwestern hug, and we were like, whoa, this is a lot, right? Because they were like, oh, we can help with this, or we can help with that. And we weren't exactly sure how to embrace that change. But the best part about it is they are so good at so many things that we as Electra weren't so good at, that we've managed to leverage all that goodness while still remaining independent as a brand. I always say the very smart people at Trek knew that if they moved the Electra brand to Wisconsin, to the Trek headquarters, that would likely be the death of the brand.
Yep.
Right? And we live at the beach. We're one block from the beach here. Mm. The beach was the company was founded at the beach. You know, our heritage is beach and beach cruiser and now e-cruiser. So it's just a great fit. And so we do leverage a bunch of things from Trek. I mean, they have made us much, much better at supply chain and inventory management than we ever were before. They've made us much better at forecasting than we ever were before. They've got us into the best factories to build our bikes. We're always at good ones, but now we're at great ones.
Yeah.
So I think all of those things have been a super uptick for Electra. The other thing I'll say is that, you know, Trek is very passionate about personal growth.
Yeah.
And so they have a lot of things in place to help us and our Electra employees be the best that we can be.
Mm.
And they push us in ways to do things that maybe even we didn't think that we could do. Some of that comes on the sustainability side, which is all like our plastic basket, right?
Yes.
And the things like us always pushing us to explore, and they're pushing us to think outside of our own box. And I think that's why we've been able to do some of the awesome things we've done over the past 10 years under the Trek umbrella.
Yeah, awesome. Talk me through the business of that transition to electric. Feels to me, for a lot of those brands that started out as acoustic and have transitioned to electric, that in some ways it's actually quite a different business and a different business model. I'm curious for you if you think that's the case. Is that, because that's what I've heard, but I think it's different for every brand. Like, you know, it's 60% of your business. Clearly you've pivoted and you've really leaned into that. But how has it changed the business over time? And like, how do you think the overall industry has responded as well?
I think you're right. I think there's a lot of bike brands that struggled to make that jump. I think for us, we had, you know, a couple things working in our favor. The biggest probably was Trek, you know, because they were pushing all in, and they really pushed us to move quick and to move strategically in that area. And it opened the door to some great suppliers like Bosch.
Mm.
And it was in 2017 that we really pushed all in E. We launched three brand new Bosch-based e-bikes globally in 2017. And that was kind of the jumping off point for us. We played in the space for, you know, 3-4 years prior to that, but it wasn't in a big way like we had before. And the other thing is, Oliver, is that, you know, our consumers, you know, were always lifestyle-based consumers.
Mm.
So I think we struggled less than some of the enthusiast-based brands did trying to make that leap.
Yep.
Because, you know, we didn't butt up against as many, you know, of the people saying, oh, that's cheating because, you know, you're not really working hard, or you're not doing that, or you're not getting a sweat or whatever. Our consumers were just being like, hey, you know, we just want to go ride a bike for fun.
Yeah.
And guess what? This e-bike is really fun. So yeah, it's a great fit for us. So we didn't have to go out and find a whole new consumer demographic or consumer base to support our e-business. It was just a natural progression for our customers to make that step to e. They can go further. They can sometimes go a little faster. I would joke and say, you know, riding a cruiser bike, an acoustic cruiser bike, it's the most fun thing in the world. You know, you're sitting upright. You have your handlebars are wide. You got a great view. You're cruising around town. You're looking at the ocean. All of that is great until you have to go up a slight hill. And a hill on a single speed cruiser bike doesn't have to be much of a hill.
Totally. Yeah.
But guess what? With an e cruiser or an e townie, you know, and a e lock, all of those go away. And so I think for our consumers, it was just this natural progression. They said, yeah, E is awesome. We love the Electra brand. We love your style. We love the color. You know, we love those designs. We love some of the heritage stuff that you did before, and now you're bringing it to us in that E package. Yeah, we're all in.
my sense is also that there might have been new customers that have come along with, because that's certainly what I've heard, right? Is that like the E opens up the world of new customers for a lot of bike brands that would be, can you talk through that part of it? Like, have you found that since you've transitioned to E, that it opens up new customer base?
Yeah. I think because, you know, our brand started 30 years ago, you know, our traditional customers kind of been baby boomer X a bit for us, and you know, so I think E resonates with them as they start to age in that process, because it's just easier and fun, and it makes it more readily available for them to go do the things they want to do on a bike. But the flip side of that is that we have started to attract this younger demographic that probably wasn't, always attracted to our brand before, because now some of our new, more modern styling, again, because of our colors, and again, because of the E. And again, this kind of surrounding fervor, at least over the past 2.5-3 years of e-bike boom, I think that's just brought a lot more people to the game in general. You just can't talk about, you can't go anywhere these days where people talking about bikes where they're not talking about e-bikes, even in circles where you thought that they probably wouldn't be chatting about them before.
That's my sense too. So, you know, the business itself, it sounds like it's transitioned, but you've stayed with the traditional, like, we're going to go through bike shops. We're not going to go direct to consumer. That's been, I mean, I know that that's been an intentional choice. You've obviously done that with Trek. You started like that and then you've gone, continue that Trek. Like, reflecting kind of more broadly on the industry, what's your sense around how sustainable those are? What things are that you're like interested in or worried about with that kind of movement towards more direct to consumer e-bike brands?
Yeah, it's different, right? I mean, we were talking before, you know, we just weren't born in that direct to consumer era. So for us, it's just a different space, right? And, you know, the good part about it is we have a great retail channel. It's very robust, and we have some fantastic retailers that really get the business, that are really committed to it, and are committed to, you know, the Electro lifestyle brand, both acoustic and E. And we have that globally. So I think for us, you know, that's the channel of choice, you know, and we're committed to, you know, having our bikes built by professionals in bike shops. We're committed to having our bikes serviced at bike shops, because even more so now with the rise of e-bikes, those bikes do need to be serviced on a more regular basis for sure. You know, the one thing I will say is, and this is no surprise, I mean, you know, Trek is opening up a lot of their owned stores, right? So they have a bunch around North America and Europe and Asia Pacific, you know, and for the most part, we're in all of those stores as well too. So while they function like a independent retailer would, having a brick and mortar store, you know, they're basically more mono brand, you know, Trek, Electra, Bond, Traeger, you know, the brands under the Trek umbrella. So we're selling in those too. So we do get to see some difference in how bikes are, you know, purchased in that environment versus an IBD environment. And of course, we do allow our consumers to buy online and pick up that bike in a store somewhere as well too.
Man.
So it's different. I mean, consumers' buying habits have definitely changed. I mean, I think that's a definite head scratcher a bit. You know, I don't think you and I would have thought, you know, 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, even almost 10 years ago, you know, would people really be consumer buying bikes online?
And then having them shipped to them and putting them together into that, and they'd be okay with that. Right. Yeah, right. Totally. And this servicing thing, I think that's the one part that kind of keeps coming up to me is, and I interviewed the founder of Turn with the GSD, and it was such a different mindset to a lot of the, because a lot of the companies that we've dealt with have been D2C, and part of it has been around the business model, which is they're just like, we make these vehicles, we've got demand from everywhere because they found them online, because they're really Instagram, you know, Instagrammable. And so you end up with people saying like, yeah, I want one shipped, but I live in Wisconsin. And another one's like, yeah, I want it shipped, but I live in Australia. And it's like, okay, well, guess we're doing that. You know, and that's how that start to sell. And that's the way that you do it. And it feels to me like there's things lost in that transition of going direct to consumer, and like a lot of the things that you talk about it.
Well, listen, Josh had been in the business for forever.
Yes.
And I know they make a great product and really committed to that, you know, independent bike dealer space as we are. But yeah, I mean, that servicing is tricky, you know, and those big direct-to-consumer brands have had to tackle that, and some have been more successful than others, you know.
Yep.
And I've seen a lot of those direct-consumer brands, and I've seen, you know, people posting videos of them, you know, riding their new bikes that they built. And I look at them and be like, well, that's a bummer because you got the fork flipped around the wrong way.
Yeah.
or the brakes aren't quite right, or you can just see like, wow, this is not built properly. And so I think that's super, super important. And listen, bikes aren't getting any simpler.
No.
Right?
I think
as a matter of fact, they're getting much more complex. And even some of the things we're doing are complex in some ways, but compared to what you're starting to see out there for our, earlier discussion, people are starting from a computer and working backwards to make the bike.
Right. Yes.
And so I think as you start to see those things becoming in market hardware, it's gonna be tricky though, the way the servicing for that works. I'm a Tesla guy.
Yeah.
You are too.
I am. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
So we have a fleet of them.
Totally. And, yeah.
As a church turns up, is I think when would you have one? You're like, oh my, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And I like the fact that that I'm not burning petrol, so that's good. But sometimes I forget the fact that I always joke and say it's the only car I've ever had that keeps getting better, right, with time, because I'm getting up over the air updates on it.
Right.
Yep. So it actually does more now than when I first bought it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think directionally that's where the bike will go.
Yeah.
Where you can count on. If you can get it simple enough so consumers can build it confidently, and if you can find a way to get updates to consumers so that it's running properly all the time, then there's definitely, a model there.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's like, obviously, I think direction, that's where we're going. I think we will see a smartphone or an iPhone equivalent for e-bikes coming. And I don't know quite what that moment will look like, but I think we'll know when we see it. Yes. Well, maybe we will know when we see it. 3 years behind, 3 years later, and like you didn't, when the iPhone was launched, there were a whole bunch of people who were very dismissive and think it was going to make a difference. But I think there's just what it will enable in terms of that, related to servicing, what it'll related to like just the whole overall experience, being able to get better over time, being able to kind of delight a customer in a way that you can't do with this traditional, bike. I think it's going to be super interesting.
Yeah. I would say that is, a challenge that we've always said about selling through an independent channel, right?
Yes.
This is with any product, right? So we can go through every painstaking process, right, through our factories where we're watching how they're building them and making sure every weld is perfect and everything is put together great, and how our paint and the artistry of that bike just is absolutely, a 6 out of 5, on the Electra scale.
Yeah.
And we just love everything about it. And we're putting in packaging now that it's much more sustainable. We've managed to remove hundreds and hundreds of pieces of plastic out of packaging and really reduce it down to a very, very small footprint. And then we take that box and we ship it to, a retailer, and it gets built and put out on a floor. So, but the point of contact with the consumer, is different. We don't have control over that. That's a first place in the chain where we don't have absolute control over the storytelling around it, right? Which is why the direct-to-consumer brands, sometimes have a bit of a leg up on that, because they're relying on a web page that they can update and make very personal all the time, which is why it's super important to have great, great retailers, that are competent at telling that brand story and understanding the nuances of the brand and why it's important for their consumers.
The other thing that I found super interesting in the direct-to-consumer element is also that being able to build and maintain that connection with the customer over time. Like, one of the things that I note is that once you go to an IBD, it's sort of that you end up with, like, that you don't necessarily know, one, where your bike's being used, how it's being used, servicing. I mean, do you get data back from them around servicing cadences or anything like that?
Through the Trek-owned stores,
yes.
We can see that data. They're very good about collecting consumer data.
Yeah.
But no, we rely on, industry data for that. So it's not customer direct data.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's a definite value add that you get when you're a direct to consumer.
Yeah. Excellent. Hey, well, the other thing that I'm kind of curious about for you is, we talked a little bit before about shared and subscription businesses and that sort of thing. You've obviously gone with that very, the standard business model until now. Do you have any sort of sense of whether or not there would be interest in the idea of going to subscription, or the idea, alternative means of being able to access and put your bikes into customers' hands that wouldn't be the traditional through that channel or direct to consumer? That might look like hey, we can do a subscription business for this, or do you?
Yeah, I think it's super interesting. And there's something there, and even for the Electra brand, because the products we're making are so approachable, right? They're they're simple. And that's a goal of ours, right? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, to be, we always say, listen, for us, it's about being obsessed with the front line.
Yes. Right?
Really understand what your retailers are doing and asking for and need, what your customers are asking for, what they want, what you can give them, what value adds you can give them in their day-to-day routines. And then the second thing is just waging this war on complexity and how to keep the business as simple as possible. And I think there's some definite simplicity in some of those either share programs or leasing programs or other ways to get more bikes in front of more consumers more often. So I think that's not off the table for us. We talked earlier about, you know, B-Cycle, which is, you know, a bike share program under the Trek umbrella that house while here in our office for our little Encinitas area. So there's some good models out there now. It's just, where do we, what's the next step in the evolution there, you know, to get more of those bikes in front of more consumers?
Yeah, totally. I also wonder as well about the, you know, what is required on the bike side or the business side to be able to make, you know, like, what would it take to make a meaningful contribution to your business to have fleets of a size? What would the business model need to be in terms of leasing? Like, you know, you might do, you know, 5 or 10 of those things, you know, but it's like, that's a week's worth of sales on an annual year. Like, it's not going to move our business, you know. Like, what would that have to look like?
Yeah, it would have to be hundreds of thousands of bikes.
Yeah, exactly, right.
To move the meat. But, you know, I mean, again, I think it can be. Right. I mean, I think the demand is there.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been quite uncovered yet. You know, I think that, like we said, will we recognize day one, you know, the next game changer, or will it take us 3 years to see, like, ah, that was when it happened?
Yeah.
Then,
yeah.
You know, and I think that's the same thing with the share, you know, and these consumers. Will we recognize them today or 2 years from now or 18 months from now? Will we look back and say, oh yeah, that was the group. That was the one that pushed them over the edge, you know? Because in my gut, I believe they're there. I believe people want to find, you know, a better way to move themselves around cities to get from point A to point B that's, you know, 5 and 10K distances.
Yeah.
Just not always readily available for them. There's too many blockades now, right?
One of the ones that I have seen that's been fascinating to watch the expansion of has been employer-based schemes. So, for example, like, I know for some of the European brands like Cowboy and VanMoof, they've had real success being able to go into US-based employers and finding that, like, oh yeah, sweet, we'll take a big fleet of those things. And do you?
No.
As an employee perk provided, similar to what they would get as like a public transport subsidy, you know, or like a thing, and they do it for a parking management. They're doing it on the parking management element, right? Which is like, oh, it saves us having to provide a car park for our employees.
Right.
If we give them a bike, and people can opt into that. And actually, they're finding that is a really valuable thing, especially if you live in an area that is, you know, congested for that sort of thing.
And it was all the way back, I think, in 2015, we started working with Google up in the Bay Area because that was their big thing. Like, we're out of parking spaces.
Yes.
Right. We have too many employees, not enough parking spaces. So we worked with them, and that was, you know, it was pre e-bike, really.
Yeah.
So we work with them on, you know, mass fleets of bikes. And I think that there's definitely a market for that.
But when you did that, were you just selling them the bikes? Because my sense is that for a lot of them, what they're looking for is like, we want a turnkey solution that's like, you give us the bike, but actually we'll pay you a monthly solution. You maintain the bikes, the people can come in the morning, they know that if their bikes have got any issue with their bikes, that it's all taken care of. Or we can switch a bike out if something happens to them. They get it the next day immediately, like, you know what's going on. So, like, that's quite a big change in your model, right? Like, you wouldn't, that's not what you guys do. And so.
It's not what we do today.
No. Yeah. Right. Fair enough. Yeah.
It's an interesting kind of spoke in the micro mobility wheel, right?
Yes.
You know, solving that sort of a problem.
Yeah.
Because it exists today.
Totally. Cool. Well, look, I'm conscious of time, and you've been incredibly generous with your time until date. And, you know, for folks who are kind of looking at this, who are interested to learn a bit more about that story, is there anything you want to talk to that you've found interesting talking to us about the micromobility world that you think is interesting from your guys' perspective coming to this, and that you're interested in that conversation with the community?
I think for us, you know, and, you know, Oliver, we talked a little bit about this early on. That is that, you know, we weren't born in that era, right? We weren't born in a time, you know, in 1993, where people were talking about micro-mobility or whatever. We're just talking about, yeah, we were born in the nostalgia era of bikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of the modern take on that classic, you know, 1960s beach cruiser. And that's our heritage, that's our DNA, right? So I guess, you know, today we look at it and say, like, how do we make that leap? What do we need to change what we're doing to bring, you know, more people to the micromobility market? And I think for us, I think we're on the right trajectory, right? Mm. We're making products that people love. Mm. We're making products that help people, you know, move around from point A to point B, even though, you know, unlike a turn or something like that, where it's really, it's aimed at that, at a consumer, right? A consumer that's commuting or that's, you know, commuting with their kids or moving, you know, more than one person or whatever. We didn't grow up and we didn't focus ourselves in that space. We just said, hey, how can we continue to make riding bikes easier, accessible, stylish, and fun, right? And so if we can do those things, then I think we're going to continue bringing more people to the world of riding bikes and riding e-bikes. And then by default, some portion of those, some but not all, will be like, hey, this is a great solution. As a matter of fact, if I keep doing this, I don't need my car.
Totally.
And so I think we stick to the electro way of doing things, you know, colorful and fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, as opportunity tune becomes in front of us, you know, again, like I said, we're a small, nimble team. We have a powerhouse of Trek in our corner that's always open to hearing great ideas. And you know, I think we tackle those in the future, and future could be here today.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Appreciate it. Cool. Thanks so much.
No worries.
Okay, cheers.